Welcome to part one of Deliver Clinical Hypnosis Session, the Ericksonian Hypnotic Methods. Ericksonian hypnosis is also known as permissive or modern hypnosis. So let's look at this. The first cornerstone, and probably the most important one, is utilization. What is utilization? It is including and highlighting different aspects of the client experience in order to conduct the session. So the first and most obvious element of utilization is the surroundings. So your induction could simply be done by including different aspects of the client experience in that moment. For instance, you could suggest to them as they sit in the chair, they become aware of the support beneath them. You could say, you could also notice the stillness in your legs or the slowing rhythm of your breathing. Or you might utilize, if you're in a noisy room, you could suggest that they become aware of the sounds around them. If those sounds could just serve to support them going into a deep, comfortable level of trance. In fact, you can utilize pretty well anything. If they're anxious, you could suggest that they become aware of that anxiety and recognize it as just a sensation in the body that can support them relaxing into this. If an ambulance or fire truck goes past, and the siren's blaring, again, with the modern Ericksonian model, you can utilize that. So you can suggest that as they hear the siren go past, they could be aware of the urgency with which they can make a change. No matter what it is that happens, in an Ericksonian model, you can utilize it. So far from these things being interruptions, you make a plausible link. Someone knocks on the door. As you hear someone knocking on the door, you can start to recognize the importance of doors opening and doors closing in your life. Whatever it is, you can utilize it. You can also utilize things like their career, their workplace. If they're a mechanic, you might utilize that by including a more mechanical style metaphor. Talk about the different parts, the moving parts of their life. Or if they're a cook, you could talk about the ingredients for success and how you put things together. Most of the time, we're going to be talking to them about process, how to do something. Well, you can put all the ingredients together for a carrot cake, but it's got to be put together in an order and sequence. You can't just put the elements together in a bowl, then place them into the oven, cook them for an hour, and then bring them out and then mix them. There's an order and sequence to things. Additionally, you might want to make the point that you can't put together all the elements for a carrot cake, bake it, and then pull it out of the oven and expect a banana cake. Everything you do, it's a process. And there's a fairly predictable result out of that process. Their interests and strengths, wherever they're good, wherever they love doing what they do, there's resource there. What do their interests or their strengths suggest as far as resource goes? If they're a bushwalker, what does that imply? What strengths does that demonstrate? Ultimately, if they're an artist. If they're an artist, what can you utilize out of that? So as a hypnotherapist, having had an interview with them, it's important for you to be thinking, how can I utilize what this person is bringing to the table here? So as a hypnotherapist, how will we use someone's interests or strengths? Well, if they're an artist, what does that imply about their abilities? How do you utilize that? Maybe they're a sports person. Well, what does that tell you? What challenges must they be able to overcome? Just inherent in the fact that they play football or tennis. What analogies can you use? You can always put the ball in the other person's court. How do you use an analogy that they're going to get? They're going to understand right dead center of their chest. You can utilize their values and their beliefs. I remember I had a psychologist from Brazil in one of the courses, and she came to the front of the room for a demonstration. And the problem that she was running is that she was really running a very low self-concept. And she was a devout Christian as well. So how do I utilize that, I thought. It was a fairly simple equation. During the hypnotic session, I suggested to her that if she was in fact a child of God, how could she not be good enough? And that was a very arresting thing for her to hear. It made sense to her. Now, that's only going to work for someone who's a devout Christian. It's not going to work for someone who's an atheist. So you've got to utilize what the client brings to the table. Their culture. What's unique about their culture that you can utilize? Could be food. Here's an example of some utilization by Michael Yabko. You've been so absorbed in feelings of distress, it will be helpful to start to get absorbed in a different and more comfortable way of experiencing yourself, and to help yourself get absorbed in new possibilities, you can let your eyes close, and why not take a few deep, relaxing breaths? Beautiful. You can also utilize permissiveness, indirect suggestions. This avoids resistance. So I don't tell you. I want you to notice the chair beneath you. You say things like, I don't know if you can be aware of the support of the chair beneath you. Maybe you could notice the sounds around you. Or some people focus their attention on the stillness in their legs or the rhythm of their breathing. I don't say you have to or you should, or I want you to, which is reflective of a more traditional model. I make the suggestion about others or possibility. But in many ways, this is a much more clever and sophisticated way of doing it. If I say to you, I want you to notice the chair beneath you, that's something that the person might find a bit challenging, that you're actually telling them what to do. And some people just do not like being told what to do. even if they know you're right, they don't really want you to tell them what to do. Ericksonian hypnosis is very much about offering possibility. Because if you look at the Ericksonian version of that same notice the chair beneath you, if I suggest, many people will start to move their attention to the support of the chair beneath them. You can't help but go there anyway. I'm not telling you to do anything. I'm sharing something with you. And as a result of that, just to process what I've said, you have to go there. So there's the illusion of choice. In actual fact, Erikson's model isn't that permissive. It's about directing you in a way that seems like I'm not. It's often referred to as the illusion of choice. And why do we do that? Because it creates less resistance. You're not going to say anything that the client could react to because you're not telling them directly to do anything. You're just making suggestions. You're sharing something. Ultimately, it's very hard to fight because there is no, I don't want to do that. Because they're not feeling like they're being told what to do. And the traditional model comes out of a period of time when authority was saying that it was more respected. In a growing world of individuality, more and more people are not going to want to be told what to do. The average person under 30 now is not going to be told what to do. The only people I'm going to be more directive with would generally be older people. People in their 60s, 70s, 80s who are much more used to listening to authority and not questioning it. Or people from other cultures, anything from Asia, subcontinent, Middle East, they're much more comfortable, much more used to being just told what to do. There's a hierarchy and they accept it. But anything from the Western world now, a permissive model is going to be much more likely to land. The third piece is speaking the client's experiential language, and this comes back to utilization again. What is their language? If they come in and they swear a lot, then I'm going to start swearing too, because I want to be more like them. The more two human beings seem to be similar, the more trust is generated. So I'm going to utilize whatever they bring to the table. If they're more sophisticated, then I'm going to step it up from a sophisticated perspective. If they're more erudite, then I'm going to go down that line. Whatever they bring to the table, I'm going to match. And again, this comes back to, you know, sometimes their career, their workplace situation will frame that. So I'm going to go there. Indirection is something I've just been referring to. I don't tell you what to do. I suggest to you that others, sometimes, most people, you know, there's a social proof piece to that. If I say most people find themselves turning their attention inward and just starting to notice the rhythm of their breathing, you can't help but go there. And because at the unconscious level, we tend to want to do what everyone else is doing. This is something called social proof. Others did it. I'll probably do it. It's okay. If others can do it, then I want to be able to do it. We're going to tailor the experience to that particular client. No two sessions that I have ever done would be exactly the same. There might be aspects of a session where I'm making a very similar point, where I could say something pretty similar, but the entire session, there's no two that would be exactly the same. So it's very different from a scripted approach. And that's why, in my view, it's so much more successful, is that if I can match the client experience, the client's going to relate to what I say much more and hence increase my success rate. Now, the better I am, the better I will be at matching the client experience, which means I'm much more likely to hit the mark with them each and every time. Does anyone get it right perfectly every single time? No, I don't think so. Ericsson had his failures too, but it's about increasing the likelihood of getting an outcome. So although you might want to, you might use the same metaphor with three people in a single day, you might highlight different aspects of it depending on the client in front of you. Fairly recently, I was working with a 15-year-old boy who was struggling at school. Another person who was 40-odd, struggling with the loss of a partner. Another person struggling with a completely different situation. And I used the same metaphor on all three of them, but I highlighted different aspects of the experience. So let me give you the example. I had a client that came in and he had pain in his left foot. And he pointed to a Nike that was on the end of a steel rod. He didn't have a left foot. He'd lost his left leg in a motorcycle accident. But he had something called phantom limb pain. And it was fairly early in my career, and I was a little bit shocked to start off with. But then I realized, we just go through my normal process, no matter what. You step back from whatever comes your way, and then you go through your process. Well, for the young boy, I highlighted that he'd lost his leg, but he was still finding a way of living his life. That he wasn't going to be just like everyone else, and that was never going to change. By the way, this young man, this young amputee, was planning a trip to Everest base camp. He was looking for a sport he could play because he wanted to become a Paralympian. He had a girlfriend. He was only 30-odd at the time. He'd lost his leg when he was 20-odd. He was running his own business. He was really proactive, and he refused to be a victim. So this... Just the other day, I used the same metaphor with two people. One was a 15-year-old boy who wanted to become a particular career. Just the other day, I used the same metaphor with two people. One was a 15-year-old boy who'd lost his dream. There was a career that he wanted, but he had a medical condition that had just been diagnosed that precluded him from this career, the one thing he wanted to do. So there's a really strong sense of loss and grief for the future that he'd planned. And I used the same metaphor with a woman who had... And I use the very same metaphor for a woman having marital issues. And I use the very same metaphor for a woman having marital issues. You might think, how? Well, I told a story of a client I had very early in my career. He had arrived and he came in and he said, I have pain in my left foot. And I looked down at his left foot and recognized he didn't have one. He was pointing to a Nike that was on the end of a steel rod. That steel rod moved up to the knee. There was an apparatus there. He'd lost his leg in a motorcycle accident some 8 years earlier. What he had was something called phantom limb pain. So I told the story of this young man and how he was planning a trip to base camp Everest, that he had his own business, that he had a girlfriend or in fact a fiance, that he was looking for a sport he could play because he wanted to become a Paralympian, that in actual fact, he kind of smugly suggested that he could become an Olympian or I couldn't, that he was going to turn this gap or this setback into a positive. And as he spoke to me, I started to think he was better adjusted to the world than I was. And I left, or when he left, I was so impressed by this guy. I kept thinking he might be struggling with the grief or struggling with feeling insecure or any of these things, and he wasn't doing any of that. I was projecting my own expectations on him, but in the end, he proved to just need the pain removed from his foot. And I simply suggested to him that if he was capable of phantom limb pain, that is, the experience of having pain in an area of his body he doesn't actually have, then he could also experience phantom limb pleasure. That is a very Ericksonian thing to do. And so with a young boy, the 15-year-old, I told that story. My big emphasis, of course, was turning the loss into a benefit. With the woman having marital issues, I really emphasized the fact that no matter what, he was indomitable. No matter what the situation, he was looking at what he could take charge of, not what he couldn't. His focus was always on what he could control, not what he couldn't control. So the same story, I could tease out different aspects of it. But you don't have to create a new story for every single client that walks through the door. So it's really about tweaking things for different people. We want to focus our attention on changes in mood and perspective. And predominantly, it's going to be perspective. Mood is usually short term, but perspective changes the frame. What is it that the client is thinking? What are they assuming about life and about the world or themselves that isn't working for them, that's getting in their way? We want to change that. We're solution focused. We're going to focus on the solution. We're not going to keep talking about the negative. More traditional models will go through the problem and talk about the problem. Let's talk about it some more and some more and some more. This is all about where are you now and where do you want to go? And what's the gap? We want to talk about possibility. That's our focus. We're also going to be doing something called calibrating minimum cues. So to notice what's happening for the client, their skin color. If they're in trance, the skin color will start to wash out. Skin tonus is facial symmetry. They look like their face is more symmetrical as they relax into this because we hold a lot of tension in our face. Similarly, the facial muscles will tend to flatten and soften. There'll be changes in breathing patterns which become very obvious during a session. And their lower lip can enlarge as they go into a, like a trance state. And the trance state is also a point of kind of agreement, because in many ways, this induction is you moving the client's attention around. So they're following you on all these little things, on noticing the comfort of the chair beneath them, or the stillness in their legs, or a shoe on a foot, or a watch on their wrist, and all these little ways you are moving their attention around, and they get used to coming with you. So when you're suggesting a shift or change that might be more significant in their life, they've followed you 27 times on all sorts of smaller pieces. They're much more likely to come with you on something that's maybe a bit more challenging for them. Pupil dilation is something that you will see if their eyes are open. And stillness is probably the most common one. Just complete stillness for 20 minutes or more. Sometimes you also see REM, rapid eye movement. So their eyes will be closed, but you'll see their eyelids flickering. And unconscious muscular tics are another piece. Little jerky movements. Every now and then, an arm, a leg will jerk. And no matter what, you utilize all of this. If their arm suddenly jerks, you validate it. That's right. Everything is, that's right. And communication can be offered on multiple levels.